I'm Sandy Toksvig, and welcome to the News Quiz Extra. It's a bit like the lovely regular show, but with lots of exciting extra bells and whistles thrown in, as if the Queen's speech had an extra beatbox section in the middle. On with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Stoke Newington Church Bulletin, read by Carolyn Brown.
Don't let worry kill you off. Let the church help.
And our thanks to Betty Harris for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Mark Steele and Fred McCauley. And opposite them on my left, Bridget Christie and Jeremy Hardy. Mark, what was the crowning glory of the week's news?
I would imagine that this refers to the Queen's speech.
2 points.
And but serious issue though this is,
yes.
I can't help sort of have this puerile thought that if there's any Americans over here and they saw it was on the telly, they probably thought, oh, it's a sequel. It was the Queen's speech. I can't even imagine why people watch it, because the whole business of it, of the equerries marching down with the cushions and a bloke dressed in garters that if he was anywhere else would be immediately arrested and on the front page of the Sunday Mirror. And you think, surely even the Queen can't take this seriously, and at some point...
this is bloody ridiculous! Can't we modernise it and do it on Skype?
And half the laws, of course, every year, what they want to do with these laws is they are, well, going to modernise. What we must do is modernise the post office and modernise industrial relations. And you think, well, if the post office was modernised in the way that the parliament they're talking about it is modernised, then the post office would involve postmen having to be with an equerry on either side and then knock on the door and hand you the letters on a velvet cushion. And then had the whole letter read by a second unelected postal service consisting of 395-year-old idiots and Melvin Bragg.
Did you see Black Rod? Did you see him?
Mm.
Was that Roy Walker?
Yeah, it really did look like
it. Really did. I didn't know he was in with all that lot.
Nah, it's not what you know.
Mm. No, exactly.
Why is it so ridiculous? When people try to make out that, no, the Queen, she's doing a marvellous job and she's done wonderful, her duties, and she carries them out with her wonderful precision, as if to say that she's there because she's doing... No, she's there because she was born and therefore she became the Queen. You can't make out that it's because she's good and go, oh, to think that she started out as a humble princess and worked her way... She's the Queen! And they were going, and wasn't it she wore some hat that was worth millions of pounds or something? Oh, and she wears the most wonderful hat, as if this is because she's got marvellous dress sets. Of course she's going to turn up with a wonderful hat. She's the Queen and worth a trillion squillion quid, and she's the head of state in half the world. She's not going to turn up to the opening of Parliament with a bobble hat with Derby County written on it. She's the Queen.
Only you, Mark, could describe a crown as some hat. Bringing tourists at the Tower of London in here for the some hat display. There's a big stick as well. Have a look at the stick.
But wouldn't it be great if the Queen one year just sat down on the throne and just decided to make it all up? I mean, when I say great, it'd be horrendous, but I mean, wouldn't it be astonishing?
There was virtually nothing in the Queen's speech apart from increased surveillance, because the heart seems to have gone out of them. They just haven't got the energy. I mean, Osborne and Cameron, Cameron is just narky. He's just irritated that the luxurious and frictionless flow of his life has been interrupted by reality. He's like a guest at a country house weekend where one of the beaters has been shot, and the widow doesn't accept that being allowed to stay in the cottage is adequate compensation, but is demanding a police investigation. Or there's been a murder, and Poirot has required all the guests to gather in the drawing room, and the one who's most annoyed about the inconvenience is the one responsible. They're just... And they didn't know anything about gay marriage.
No.
But what's-his-face Osborne said, well, personally, I'm in favour of it. And he's one of the most important people in the government, saying, well, if it was down to me, I mean, if I had any power... And Obama said the same
thing. Yes, but Obama has...
Personally, if I were in a position of power and influence in the world... But that just goes to show that the President of America really hasn't got any power except in international affairs.
Well, he said... Obama said he endorsed gay marriage, but he wouldn't intervene on a federal level... where 30 states have banned it. And I thought, well, there go my dreams of going to Utah and marrying five more women. what do we think of Ed Miliband? He criticised the speech for leaving people without hope, which I think he believes is his job. he said the Prime Minister had gone from David Cameron to David Brent. This is coming from Mr. Bean.
Well, he shouldn't bother. He's hopeless. They do quite well when he doesn't say anything. I think his election strategy should be to go and live in a forest somewhere in South America and then pop back in 3 years and see if he's Prime Minister or not.
The Queen's speech was unveiled this week, announcing the government's new legislative agenda. The speech was more notable for what was left out. No commitment to gay marriage, no plan for growth, and not a sniff for those free pole dancing lessons for the over 50s. I don't know why I bother lobbying. She didn't even do a song at the end. 2 points, 2 marks to you. Fred, have a listen to this. Fred, why should we beware Greeks bearing no gifts?
This was a tale of two cities, really. There was elections over in France and Greece, and the two cities, obviously, Athens, the Edinburgh of the south, and Paris, the Berlin of the west. So there's no majority party in Greece. Sad to say that 7% of the voters voted for a neo-fascist party called the Golden Dawn.
Yeah.
75% of those voters thought they were voting for Goldie Hawn. But the net result is that the whole Eurozone is now on an even shakier peg.
Well, the Germans are scared stiff they won't get their money back, although I think Britain is safe because we have wisely invested in the Olympics and the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, so I think it's... I think it's all fine.
Knew there was something wrong with the economy in Greece because my local Greek restaurant in Stoke Newington, actually, they started trying to smash paper plates.
Yeah, that's a sign, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. And then reassembling them into the shapes of swastikas. That was the bit that I thought I might start having pizzas instead.
It's brilliant, though, isn't it? It's brilliant that people are saying, no, we're not going to cough up for all of this. They didn't cause it. You know, in every country in Europe, the idea from the governments is, well, there is no alternative to this, but we have to shut libraries and schools and hospitals because they're the people who caused all the crisis.
Yeah.
It was libraries.
People not paying those
people. It was libraries who caused it, yeah.
The wealth of the richest 1,000 people in the country in the last 3 years has increased £30 billion more than the deficit. So all you do is you get those 1,000 people and say, come on. Come on, we'll turn the lights out, and when we turn the lights back up, the money's going to be on the table and we'll say no.
Do you not think the Eurozone sounds like a very boring puzzle on the Crystal Maze? It's just that thing, though, of us not ever really understanding each other, all these different European countries. I remember being in Italy and I wanted to catch the train. I think I was in Rome and I wanted to go to Florence. And I went out, they have those little grills with the information at the train station. And I said, I wonder if you could tell me the next train to Florence. He said, the next train to Florence is at 4 o'clock. I said, oh, that's great, but it's 5 o'clock now. He said, well, you missed it.
It's not an original thing to say the language is very romantic, but at the time I realised I was watching Jurassic Park on French television and it had been dubbed into French. And it was actually quite disappointing when the dinosaurs came on because they were the only things not dubbed into French and you were expecting them to go... Petit, je te mange maintenant.
I love the idea of you having a new career dubbing French films.
Weird thing happened to my husband and I. We went to visit Napoleon's tomb. Has anyone been there? It's a place called Les Invalides, yeah. And my husband had this supernatural experience, right? He was lifted off the ground by something giving him a wedgie, right? No, I'm serious. This was 4 years ago. We've not been able to draw a line under it since then. When we got home, we Googled Napoleon's tomb and wedgie and nothing came up.
Oh.
So obviously I think it was Napoleon.
Mm. Except that he was very short. Your husband's quite tall, that's all I'm saying.
But he would have been at the right height.
Ah, okay. I'm actually seriously discussing this now. Yeah. I'm actually...
So Napoleon's ghost's revenge for Waterloo is to give English people wedgies.
Wedgies.
Spooky thing. When my grandfather died, a huge portrait of him fell off the wall. hit him on the head, killed him.
How did we get here from the Eurozone? The Eurozone is in crisis after left-wing victories in the French and Greek elections. Europe planned to secure a new debt management deal in Greece by leaving their IMF monitors in a giant wooden horse just outside the border. François Hollande's new initiatives as French president will include taxing the mega-rich, negotiating the EU austerity measures, and replacing the high chairs and booster seats at the official residence. Just give you time to have a think about that. Okay. 2 points to Fred. Bridget, who thought freedom of information might pose a health risk?
This is Andrew Lansley, the health secretary, who has vetoed a request to have an internal risk assessment of his NHS reforms published. What he also said was that he really believes in transparency. And he said, but when I said I was a firm believer in transparency, I meant on things like Windows and Tupperware and bras. I didn't mean on the NHS reforms. I'd have to be an absolute idiot to let people see those.
So because of this veto, the document may not be available for 30 years.
Yeah.
Presumably the government are hoping the NHS will be so bad by then there'll be nobody left alive to read it. I don't know what the...
They're doing an edited version, aren't they?
They've actually
put an edited version where it cuts out things. They'll have the bits where they say, but Minister, this is going to be terrible and people will suffer, and they cut out the bit where he goes, yeah, whatever, like I care.
Well, if they were cunning, they could publish it secretly in a form that nobody would read. Andrew Lansley, the biography, I was thinking.
Worried about what's going to happen to GP surgeries as well. My doctor's got this really weird thing. You know, when you go on reception, there's loads of leaflets and things telling you. Well, they're giving away this one now where basically it's a list of... you know, our GPs are too busy to see us all. What they want us to start doing is to see the nurse practitioners at our GP surgeries for less serious ailments, and they're things like coughs and colds and asthma, things like that you should not bother the doctor with. And then there was this tiny list of exclusions, and they were, you should ask to see your doctor if you have any of these. And they were, you're under one. bleeding profusely from any orifice. Total blindness. Severe difficulty breathing.
I like the fact that the totally blind and the under one would find this leaflet helpful.
Exactly. Especially if they were bleeding profusely from
an orifice.
Exactly.
You're not worried.
Don't know how bad it is, Sandy. I've got a pal who's a consultant surgeon up in Scotland, and he sometimes has a fair bit of time in between the clinics and the operations. He can't access any private websites on the NHS computer. And he is barred. The Wi-Fi doesn't allow any access on his laptop.
So if he's operating and he's suddenly got a spare kidney and he thinks, oh, I know, eBay, he can't...
or even worse, if he's operating and realises the kidney he's got isn't going to work, he can't go on and bring one in. You can't order a takeaway. And it's just as well they don't, because he's an ENT surgeon. If he fitted a kidney in there, he'd be in real stook.
Bizarrely, and it's just by one of those chance things, my daughter, studying to be a doctor, she texted me today and she said, I just took blood for the first time. And I don't know what the correct response to that is. So I wrote back and said, did you ask? The transition risk register listing the potential risks of the government's NHS reforms will never be published after the government vetoed a freedom of information request. The Health Secretary Andrew Lansley's refusal to publish has been backed by MPs in Burma, China and North Korea. In a statement outside Number 10, Lansley insisted, had we not taken this decision, it is highly likely that future sensitive risk registers would turn into anodyne documents rather than the swashbuckling page-turners that they currently are. 2 points to Bridget. Jeremy, whose testimony might come in really Andy?
Oh, Andy Coulson. This was boring. I did actually fall asleep. It was that dull. But he looked like he sort of feels quite sorry for himself, because the disgraced go through an aggrieved phase before they get a job on Talk Sport. And he sort of thought, well, he's all right. He's in the clear. He's got away with it. And he's still got the big house, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I know he's got the big house, because then my partner and I were giving someone a lift home, and they said, that's Andy Coulson's house. And I won't tell people where it is, because I wouldn't want them to do what I did in his letterbox. I didn't. Well, you couldn't, because he had those brushes. You know when people have those... Isn't that a strange thing to have on your door. It's like you want your letters dusted as they're delivered.
I have to admit, I haven't been watching the Leveson Inquiry too closely because I'm waiting for the box set, but he's an amazing-looking man, Andy Coulson. I did look in today. If you were sort of doing casting for shadowy, sinister figure, is it just me? He looks like a cross between Jeremy Kyle and Kim Jong-il.
When Osborne is interrogated, I want the phone to ring and Robert J picks up the phone and says, hello? I see him, but then, Mr. Osborne, that was the banker.
He is quite dull, that leading counsel, Robert J. He said there was a danger that relations between the press and ministers could become incestuous and self-serving. Sounds like a checkout till in Norfolk.
Actually, the really exciting story, though, is Rebecca Wade, Brooks' woman. Her texts are all coming out because she got loads of texts from Cameron.
He sent a text the week she resigned.
Yeah, and he said, I'm sorry I couldn't give you more support, but Ed Miliband had me on the run. And you think, nobody else in the country noticed that, including Ed Miliband.
But also the texts are a bit, you can't really tell what they mean. He sent her a text saying, keep her head up. Now, that could be an error of judgment. It could be a horse riding tip. I mean, it's hard to say.
In Chipping Norton, where Rebecca Brooks, Clarkson, Cameron and the cheese bloke from Blur all live, one of the most conservative parts of the country, Labour has won all three wards on the council.
Has it?
Which means that Rebecca Brooks is never going to get planning permission for anything.
David Cameron's former press secretary, Andy Coulson, gave evidence to the Leveson Inquiry this week. Coulson told Leveson that a successful newspaper is one that is in tune with its readership, whereas an unsuccessful newspaper is one that is closed down by its boss after it's hacked the phones of thousands of people. The Independent on Sunday was in trouble after appearing to publish advanced details of Coulson's written statement. Although, given it was in The Independent on Sunday, at least there was no danger of the news reaching the public. 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Fred have got 4 points, but so too have Bridget and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from The Telegraph.
Doctors have been warned against using the term obese, with new advice claiming obesity is an unhelpful and derogatory word. The guidance was given in a document entitled Obesity in Local Communities.
And our thanks to Sonia Arbour for sending us that. Mark, who kettles the kettlers?
Ah, now this, I suppose, is a reference to the good people of the constabulary who were on a march against cuts in public services, meaning themselves. And so I don't know how that will have worked, whether they will have all been chanting against each other and chanting, what do we want? You're nicked. When do we want it? Down the station, don't be nasty to me, son. Hang on. That's not right.
Yeah. Do you think kettle
them? Maybe there was thousands of them there, and they said, we estimate there is 14 of us.
Yeah. Right. If they kettle themselves, that'd basically end up like a circular conga, wouldn't it?
I didn't support the march, but there was a part of me wanted to see a load of ex-miners and anti-capitalists on horseback riding into the middle of them.
We're going to have the highest pension age of any Western European country. Did you know this?
Oh.
Yeah.
What is it going to be?
68. So the police won't retire till they're 68. Can you imagine being arrested by a 68-year-old copper? Can you help me lift this truncheon?
Well, it's not like that for me.
There was others. The border staff at Heathrow went on strike, although I don't think anybody could tell. I came through Heathrow on Tuesday night and queued forever and ever and ever. There was two people on the thing, and I finally got to this chap, and he said, oh, hello, Sandy, how are you? I said, I'm fine, thank you very much. He said, I really enjoy the news quiz. I said, thanks very much. And then he started talking about favourite moments in the show. I said, I don't want to bother you. It's lovely to chat with you, but there's about 500 people behind me.
That's why the queues are so slow, isn't it? Do you know what I love about your country? It's the fauna and flora. It's so diverse. That's a lovely bag you've got. I've got a bag at home a bit like that, but mine's more of a beige. Yours is kind of a taupe, I suppose. People don't like to chat. People used to chat in the old days, not so much now. Everyone's in such a hurry, aren't they?
But see, when you got to the front of the queue, when I came back into the country and we queued for ages and ages, and we got to the front of the queue, and then there were four stations that you could possibly go to, two of which were manned, but there was a person standing at the front of the queue going, you go to that one? You go to that one? It's just like, thank God you're here, because that... I could have held this queue up for another couple of hours, wondering, should I go at the one that somebody's standing at, or will I go at the empty one?
I think the way to get round it, because there's a worry, isn't there, that with the Olympics, people are going to come in and miss the Olympics because they'll be queuing up to get in. So we should have some of the events actually in the queue. And then you could go, well, I'll tell you what, we queued for 4 hours, but at least we saw the quarterfinal of the volleyball.
Should just let everybody in, because not many people are drug dealers or terrorists, and they're trying to ascertain whether someone's presence in the country is in the national interest. You think, how many of us can put our hand on our heart and say our presence in this country is in the national interest?
Thousands of police marched through London to protest against government austerity measures. Theresa May was surprised to see police marching past the Home Office on Thursday, as she was sure the protest was on Friday. Police said it was ridiculous that when they retire, they are forced to live off a tiny pension, and when they fall asleep, they're forced to lie in the middle of the road to slow down traffic. 2 points to Mark. Fred, who's been prevented from getting their knickers in a twist?
This is another serious subject, isn't it? Was he a terrorist or was he a double agent? It's the underpants bomber, which is a... I say it's a serious subject, but it's got underpants in it, and then...
You've got to like somebody who's an underpants bomber. Yeah,
I know. Can I do the shoes? Come on, please let me be the shoe bomber. No, you're doing the underpants. You'll be forever known as the underpants bomber. And there was a picture of the pants, and they were described as being singed and charred. And, you know, there's mums all over the country going, I've seen worse.
Do you think the underpants bomber's mum, before he goes out, goes, now, make sure you wear clean underpants?
Do you know that the substance that is going to explode is undetectable by normal scanning facilities? Soon, when you go for a flight, all you'll be wearing is your belt and your shoes.
When your underpants bomb goes off, yeah, do you shout, Allahu Akbar, or, oh, better out than in?
I think we're going to be safe. Men with bombs in their pants, it's going to go off early, isn't it?
Well, the...
going to be outside the terminal going, I'm sorry, this has never happened before.
So the next time we fly, we should be looking out for anybody who every few minutes is surreptitiously adjusting their pants. A category that includes all men. The CIA claims to have foiled an Al-Qaeda plot to attack aeroplanes using an underpants bomb. The plot was uncovered thanks to the would-be bomber, a double agent working for American and Saudi intelligence. According to the Daily Mail, the agent arrived safely in an unidentified country and is being debriefed. The undercover operative managed to infiltrate a secretive ring, which coincidentally... is what the bomb would have done had it been accidentally detonated. 2 points to Fred. Bridget, who says there's no place like home advantage?
Oh, a perk that countries that host the Olympic Games traditionally exploit is the opportunity for their own teams to train in Olympic venues a little bit more than everybody else. I suppose the reasoning being is that you've paid for it and you've built it, so you can use it a bit more than all the other teams. But we, because we're British, don't think that that's fair. Ridiculous.
Well, you would have an advantage, though, if you got prior go in the Olympic thing, the track and all that, because you'd know where all the potholes are and things like that.
Well, apparently access to the venues for training is done on a lottery basis. So, for example, the Swedish sailing team might apply for, you know, 2 hours on the water and get the velodrome for an afternoon.
They're probably confused because it's amazing that we've got everything ready on time. That was never on the cards, was it?
No.
I thought it was going to be like the 100 metres. They'd all be running in and out of the diggers and stuff, and the swimming pool would have no water in it, and the swimmers would just have to run backwards and forwards across the bottom.
What's the ceremony going to be? Is it going to be sort of Chaz and Dave and the Crankies or something?
That's the thing that Danny Boyle's doing, yeah. Someone gets their arm trapped and cuts it off.
I think it should be the Dagenham Girl Pipers.
Yes.
And somebody and getting a police dog to go over a little seesaw.
Brilliant, yeah. And parsnips. Parsnip show.
I'm getting a feeling that these boys aren't in favour of the Olympics, am I right?
I love the Olympics. I can watch any sport all day. It upsets me that it's in England, because I'll watch it wherever it is. During the last Olympics, there was a moment when I'd been watching for several hours, And then the commentator, and this was a point where I thought I'm going to have to go out, was when the commentator said, and you have to say that's a critical moment in the history of Algerian judo.
Senior members of the British Olympic team have complained that the British sense of fair play is being applied so rigorously to the London Olympics that they aren't enjoying the advantages of playing at home. In a reversal of the traditional model, visiting players are being given access to the best facilities as well as being allowed to take the bed while the British team sleep on the sofa. 2 points to Bridget. Jeremy, listen to this. Homeward bound, I wish I was. Jeremy, who thinks it's healthier to go back home?
People from Eastern Europe are saying it's actually quicker to go back to Eastern Europe to get treatment than wait here, which isn't that surprising. It only takes about 3 hours to get back to Warsaw, I'd have thought. Yeah, obviously it's quicker to fly to Bucharest than get served in B&Q. So... the coalition has lost all interest in waiting times. They think that's some ludicrous idea that the longer you wait for your operation, the more you enjoy it. There's no build-up to the thing. It's just a massive anticlimax when you feel better. But if you had a couple of years of severe pain, the whole relief of just, you know, the fact that the gangrene doesn't smell as bad as it did, it just makes life so much more livable.
But this must be a story confusing the tabloids. Bloody foreigners coming over here and then going home when they've got medical problems and not bothering us with these things.
And some things are very cheap. Apparently, dentistry is very cheap in...
Well, apparently, China. The former communist countries have much better dental facilities than we do. Of course, in their time, they were Stasi torture cells, but, you know, free dentistry.
I've got a friend who's Bulgarian. She's got a five-year-old boy the same age as mine. She went back, but on her way back, she was at passport control for 3 months, so she said she might as well have just stayed here anyway and saved the airfare.
I was talking to a bloke in a pub a little while ago, it's true, and he said, oh, two makes me sick to see Kosovans. They come over here, they work for next to nothing. Next to nothing. Our blokes can't get any work, because they're just prepared to work for nothing, mate. I'll tell you, that's what happens. I said, oh, come on, mate, I don't think it happens as much as it's made out to. He said, it bloody does, I know, because I employ them.
Well, you can say what you like about these former Yugoslavian countries, but at least their teeth run in time.
My friend in Kalilan in County Tyrone says they all see the vet. Because she says, no, the thing about the vet is they can do the whole body. Because they have to do, like, kidney transplants on guinea pigs and stuff like that. She go and say, your GP's know nothing. You see a vet, they can do the whole of a species, they can do.
But a vet can also stick their arm up to the shoulder up you, so that...
Shouldn't try it with a hamster, though. You end up with sooty.
According to a study by Strathclyde University, many parents originally from Eastern Europe are flying their children home for medical treatment because of NHS waiting lists. Many parents simply fly home for the weekend, where problem teeth can either be removed by the local dentist or by a typical EasyJet landing. I should get all my medical treatment from Bupa. It's a small Eastern European country just south of Slovakia. 2 points to Jeremy at the end of round two. The scores are Mark and Fred have got 8 points, but so too have Bridget and Jeremy. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from Motorcycle News.
BMW is reportedly being sued by a man who claims he was left with a permanent erection after riding one of its bikes. A BMW source said, I don't think it will stand up in court.
And our thanks to Graham Swain for sending us that. Mark, listen to this. Mark, who finds the grass is always greener in the ghetto?
Oh, right. Now, so this is villages becoming a ghetto, which I doubt is the case. Blood, this is like the neighbourhood watch group, isn't it? You get me? Like, we're meeting around our crib, isn't it, you know? Like.
But that is, it's a misuse of the word ghetto, surely. I mean, if it's got a steeple, it can't really be a ghetto.
Yeah. Yeah, so but village is becoming a rich ghetto.
Yeah, well, the idea is that villages will be full of executives commuting to the city and the cities will be full of essential workers commuting to the villages. And all I can say is thank goodness for our wonderful railways. Yeah.
When people move out of London, they always say, and the marvellous thing is it's only 45 minutes from London. You think, we'll live in London, which is no minutes from London.
But at the same time as all this happening, a report from the think tank Civil Exchange said that the big society is failing outside the big cities, where thus far it's been a rollicking success.
I was in Suffolk a little while ago, and I thought I'd try and get the accent, listen to the accent, and I thought, God, it's actually much different from how I thought it was, because our Suffolk accent actually goes is basically when we bought it, it was just a barn. Ones who move out there that drive you mad and then get all smug and pompous and that go, oh, I don't know how you can face it living back there in London while you're stuck on the underground. Me and the family are out identifying herons and picking elderberries, and if we want any fresh meat, we get Farmer Micklethwaite. He comes round with a fresh pig and strangles it in the living room. It's absolutely splendid. And
well, they move in next door to a church, don't they? A church where the bells have rung for 900 years, and they go, oh, can't have that. Can't have that noise.
I was in the, doing my radio programmes in the Isle of Portland, and it is dramatically rural there. The wind just sweeps off all the cliffs and everything. It is very, very dramatic, and there's a big lighthouse there. And there was a little place there where you can buy these sandwiches, and I stood there in all this wind, and I just heard this bloke from London say to his wife, that lighthouse is getting on my wick.
Yeah. I was in Haworth in Yorkshire, Bronte country, the... a couple of weeks ago, and I was walking up this thing, and I heard this American tourist say, I'm telling you, if this Moore's business is uphill, I'm not going. villages in Britain are becoming ghettos for the rich, pricing the less well-off out of the countryside, according to Professor Mark Shucksmith of the Institute for Social Renewal. Rich ghettos have been cropping up all over the UK in areas such as Surrey, Buckinghamshire and the Palace of Westminster. There are fears that the influx of rich people could lead to the eradication of great British rural traditions like drink driving, incest and the use of toxic pesticides. Chuck Smith said there are dangers that the well-off could segregate themselves from the rest of Britain, which is sure to come as a shock to anyone who's not been paying attention since the Romans invaded. 2 points to Mark. Fred, why don't you just drink your coffee and go?
These are the cafe conquerors, the laptop territorialists. They're going into cafes, setting up office with their laptops, mobile phones, and they won't budge. Then other people are coming in that don't have laptops and phones. They just want to sit and have a coffee and a chat. And they're having to say to the staff, listen, can you move them on? And the staff are saying, did you try? And they said, well, no, I went over and went, you're going to be long. They tut and they huff. It's not working. Tutting and huffing. The staff are having to ask them to move on.
I find them stressful places, all those coffee shops.
Do you know what they should do? Give them a time and say, right, if you're having a 4-shot latte, you can stay for an hour. And if they want another hour, they give them another 4 shots. And another 4 after an hour like that. By 4 in the afternoon, Britain is going to be back on its feet. We are going to be buzzing. So industrious.
But it's antisocial to take up a whole table in a coffee shop. If I want free coffee and Wi-Fi, I break into my neighbour's house. There's no need to go.
I was in a Starbucks and a priest came in with a portable confessional box. And no one seemed to mind. It wasn't soundproof, so it was actually very entertaining.
Shakespeare wrote Macbeth in services on the M40.
Why it ends abruptly. Because they moved him on.
Yeah.
Oh, just bloody witches, I mean, a death, something, or anything, a spot or something. Oh.
We're coming to you live from Pret a Manger in Lower Regent Street.
There's a pub near me that has free Wi-Fi, and I do spend all day in there, although those two facts are less connected than they should be. New research shows that coffee drinkers with laptops are the cause of arguments in cafes as they hog tables. Hog tables, they're very big in Denmark. Honestly, any furniture made out of bacon, we are a happy people. Wi-Fi loiterers have been annoying many people who frequent the coffee chain Starbucks, although because this is the BBC, I should point out that other ways of annoying Starbucks customers are also available. 2 points to Fred. Jeremy, why is the box putting some men off the job?
Oh, people think, because they've seen it a lot in dramas, that having sex is bad, is connected to heart attacks. And the medical advice is it's actually perfectly safe to continue to have sex even after you've had a heart attack. Try telling the nurse that.
But it's not sex with a loved one that kills you. It's when your wife walks in, I think.
Yeah. Doesn't it depend on what type of sex you're having as well, though? Like, if you're into...
chest sex.
But, like, if you're into role-playing and you've dressed up as, like, a masked intruder...
Right.
..that might have a different effect to, say, if you've dressed up as an accountant or or a golfer. What do you think, Fred?
I don't dress up as a golfer for sex. I quite dress up as a golfer instead of sex.
Senior editor of Harvard Health is a man called P.J. Skerritt, said the message that sex caused heart attacks had been overblown.
Ben Bridget, can I just say, I may have looked kind of quizzical when you started to mention role play, but we do that, my missus and I.
Do you?
She dresses up as a nurse with defibrillators. Bring it on.
I was thinking about it, because I think it's a brilliant thing that there's a great sort of openness about sexuality, that much more than there was 30 years ago, obviously. But on the other hand, I think, why do people want to muck about with sex like that? It's all right as it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who are these people having sex and thinking, oh, it needs something extra? Leave it alone. It's like having a lovely curry and then putting a trifle in the middle. Just leave it alone. And I can be adventurous. I might say tonight, dear, why don't you face the wardrobe? But it's just... Bloody people, just what are you mucking about? If I'm having sex, I just can't believe me luck. Never mind trying to muck about it. Oh, I don't know, it's not working for me. Maybe if we go on the internet and get a complete stranger to whack me on the arse with a shovel, just do it normally, you idiots. I saw Russell Brand on this thing going, oh, you know what it's like when you and a mate are both having sex with the same woman? And I thought, no, I don't know. No, I bloody don't. I don't make it out that I'm the weird one, because I don't know your tawdry, weird Russell Brand world. With the mate and the woman, I wouldn't know. I'd lose all my bearings. A bit of me would be trying to keep the woman happy, and then I'd see me mate and go, did you see the cricket highlights?
According to American cardiologists, storylines in TV dramas that feature men dying in flagrante are unnecessarily putting heart attack victims off sex. In Downton Abbey, Lady Mary is left aghast when a Turkish diplomat dies in her bed. It was less because of the body and more that she'd remembered how badly written her next few lines of dialogue were. The report did acknowledge it's no surprise that sexual activity tends to decline slightly for both men and women during the year following a heart attack, particularly if that heart attack is fatal. how old are you, Mark? How old are you?
Oh, I don't know. I'm over 50. I feel stupid. I mean, I know in the Radio 4 world that's not very old, but...
But am I allowed to say, didn't you just get married? Did you not just get married last month?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it...
Where's this going in regard to this question?
Well, the thing that I was thinking about is that the other issue with ageing is memory loss. Have a listen to this clip of Jeremy on Stafford FM.
You're coming to Stafford next Saturday on the 7th of April. What can audiences expect from you?
The 7th of April, is it?
Yeah, I believe it is the 7th of April, yes.
When's the 7th of April? Next weekend?
Next Saturday. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Why? What have next Saturday's
I've
the 7th of April.
I've got my dates on. I'm supposed to be at Mark Steele's wedding next Saturday.
Are you joking?
Oh, God. That's a huge nightmare then. Am I really supposed to be there next Saturday?
Let me just check the website. Yeah. It's are you best man?
I will be there. I'll have to just leave at the wedding early and go up to that.
Oh, this is...
Oh, what a nightmare.
This is dreadful.
Oh, well, never mind.
I cancelled. Stafford is now next week. Not that, I mean, I didn't cancel the whole of Stafford. I realised that logistically you couldn't leave a wedding in Brighton at sort of 10 o'clock in the evening and be in Stafford for 8 o'clock. So I had to postpone it. And then Mark very nicely asked me to do a speech, and just before I stood up to speak, that was played.
Rather than the sort of boring old traditions of throwing flowers, we thought we'd humiliate Jeremy. which has now become a tradition that is going to happen at every wedding.
His whole sham marriage was all concocted by Mark and some illegal migrant lesbian woman in order to embarrass me and lose me much-needed work in the West Midlands.
That is, not true. I wanted to marry Mark. Weeks, you were so honest, and you went, "Oh, I've got it complete." I'd have gone, "Yes, I'll be there," thinking in my head, "Oh, what have I done?"
And I was in Tesco's as well. I hadn't even remembered I was doing an interview. I was trying to buy smoked salmon.
Anyway, congratulations, Mark. Yeah. Just watch your heart. That's all. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Steele.
I was very saddened to see that Vidal Sassoon had died. Partly because, Vidal Sassoon was a founder member of a group of people who went round trying to stop fascist meetings in the 1940s in the East End of London. And this is just from one obituary. One day he arrived at work where he was training to be a hairdresser, covered in bruises. His manager asked how they'd happened and he said, "I tripped over a hairband."
Mr. McCauley.
This is from the BBC website about children's behaviour. Scottish 15-year-olds are also more likely to drink alcohol than their European peers and are more likely to have had sex. However, the good news is that Scottish school children seem to be happy.
Ms. Christie.
From the Foreign and Commonwealth Office website, this is how to apply for a passport if you're living in Germany. We recommend that you send us your application by secure means, such as registered post or a courier. Do not highlight the outside envelope that it contains a passport application. Where to send? Passport section. British Consulate.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Kim Mosedale of Keswick, and it's the instruction leaflet from Tiger Balm. Effective in relieving headaches, stuffy nose, insect bites, muscular aches and pains, sprains and flatulence. Directions: apply Tiger Balm gently on the affected areas.
Let's take a look at the final score. Bridget and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners, on a whim of my own, are Mark and Fred with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Merseyside Police Twitter feed.
A caller reported at 7:14 p.m. that someone was yelling, "Help!" from a residence on Bank Street. The officer responded and was told the person was calling for a cat named Help.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Mark Steele, Fred McCauley, Bridget Christie and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Carolyn Brown. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roderick Crooks and James Kettle, with additional material by Nadia Kamal and Tom Neenan. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.